Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And it's episode 163 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Well, what do you know?
I know plenty.
Oh, good. Good for you.
Yeah. I've studied hard. Just
now
for
I'm here.
This day.
That's right. Now you're here knowing things.
Knowing things. I know all sorts of things. I know that as we record this, Crisis, the first three parts of the five-part crossover is going to start, and they're doing one part a day, which... It's interesting to me, like, how they're rolling this one out compared to the previous ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get the break. I get the month break, given the story. Like, if you right. know Crisis, everyone, I think, who knows Crisis, who's read the books, knows exactly where that break has to happen.
Right.
Mm. If you don't, you'll find out. But, like, all the other crossovers have been, like, you know, two episodes a night and all this, and I think it's like they have five episodes and they have a break, so we're just going to do it one per night. Which just, it feels really weirdly slow for them.
Huh.
Do you know what I mean? Like, cause like again, all the other ones, like, even when they, like, three or four parts, it's been, like, two nights and we're done.
Yeah. No, this time they're just taking you through the week.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's Christ. It's the biggest thing, so...
Yeah, I'm good with it. I'm happy to get like little bits of Crisis a night, every night
yeah,
a bit of Crisis.
I will admit, a Crisis Scrum. I am kind of liking that they're doing the thing they did last year, which is every show that will be part of Crisis ends with the same scene that like naturally occurs only in one episode.
Right. Yes.
It's a nice little table set, so they don't have to have everything, like, dovetail into Crisis, necessarily.
Yeah.
But I did get the huge fucking, like, I admit it, it got me. I had that weird nerd moment, where it's just, like, just raw fucking nerd candy, where at the end of every episode, there's, like, this noise, and then red skies, I was like, ah!
Yeah, no,
I mean,
I like that.
Yeah, Crisis came out when I was, like, you know, like, 11, like, I was reading comics then, but I, you know, I've been reading DC for, like, a year. And it was like, I mean, it was this huge thing, right? Like at the time it was just no one had ever seen anything like this. And so there's that bit of me that's like, I mean, there's always that, like, I never thought I'd see this on TV. We say it, we kind of laugh, but this one kind of feels like, okay, but this one, like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think it took this long for, you know, for all the shows to work as well as they are and all the sort of,
yep.
and the Berlanti-verse to gain enough sort of confidence to go all in on essentially
right.
the biggest sort of DC storyline.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can't do this early days. Like, you need to lead up to it. It needs, you know, you need history behind it to make it matter.
Right.
Because if you do this, like, in, like, season one of anything, it's just like, yes, so, who the fuck cares? Like, whatever.
I mean, they are doing this with Batwoman, but that's a bit of a different. It's a little bit different with that
right.
because they're. I
well,
mean,
and
everything
it takes place in an established universe, at least.
Exactly. And
you know,
I don't know if we've talked about the last episode of Batwoman.
We haven't.
The Mad Tea Party.
We have not. Let us do that thing.
Because that was, I thought, a very bold swing for a first season of TV. What is it, 7 episodes in, and they've already had, like, a... Spoilers for Batwoman people. They've already had, a main character death.
Yeah.
And they've... I guess, how do I put this? I mean, often you get... In superhero shows, in superhero media, you get moments when the main character, the hero, is wrong. They make an incorrect choice, and then they have to sort of change course because of it. But usually they kind of have, I don't know how to put it, like almost like a backup set of circumstances that sort of takes the sting out of the wrongness of their
decision. They have a buyback.
Yeah, exactly. And there's and you always so it always leads to this weird sort of like deflating of tension in which, you they can't really sort of go all in on the main character fucking up because there is that buyback built in.
Right.
But I felt they didn't do that with Batwoman in this.
Agreed.
Kate Kane fucked up royally. She went chasing after the love of someone who was just straight up evil and
Right.
ended up by her omission on both the sort of her the her personal life and her heroic life let something terrible happen. And
Yeah.
she gets to know she has, now she has to live with it, essentially.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the season was, and I'm using victim wrong, but you'll see what I mean, was the victim of crisis in a beautiful way.
Oh.
A lot of the shows, I mean, we're used to it, right? Like we get like the terrible season-long thing. And with crisis, I mean, obviously set up to upend everything in a major way.
Right.
Like even Flash is just like, well, we have like a half season, like the villain, and not to we can talk about Flash later, but like, you know, we have the season-long villain of Flash, but it's only gonna last 8 episodes,
Yeah.
and then we'll have the back half, which will be something else because the circumstances around the universe itself are going to change. And I think knowing that, they kind of had to do the same thing with Batwoman, but doing it as like the first season, you know, gives it a whole different feel. Because in any
Right.
other year, this first 7 episodes would have been an entire season.
Feels like it,
I mean,
doesn't
it
it?
really would
Yeah.
have been. And I think that the show sings because of it, and I hope that that becomes their new kind of mode, right? Like that they can just bite the bullet and do this stuff a little harder, a little faster, a little meaner, because it's a bat show. Like you have to get that regret in there. You have to have the you know, you have to live with this and keep moving. But they can get it in there faster. Because they're not like, well, we have to do this for 22 episodes, let's vamp for a while.
Yeah.
But I really do think it is crisis that's forced all of the shows to kind of tighten down in the first half. Because so much is about to change.
Oh, definitely. Like with Supergirl, they took care of like several things all. I
Yeah.
mean, they really. I mean, I didn't see several episodes of Supergirl. I just kind of skipped ahead I saw a few and then I skipped ahead to this one, and I didn't think I would have missed much, but I've.
Oh, you
It's.
really did.
Oh, I really did. Like, suddenly Mitch Pileggi is there, and
Yep.
the Veronica Mars actress person whose name I can never remember
Right.
is a villain, and we've got like we got Myriad's purpose. Like so many things happen. I'm like, oh crap! I did not think I
Yeah,
would
no,
be.
because again, like I really do think like this is, I mean, if we're at all right, if everyone is kind of at all right with where Crisis goes, they're gonna have to merge the Earths. At
Yes,
least a few of
probably.
them. And that's gonna change the circumstances of every single show.
It's gonna be
And
interesting.
yeah, but it does mean that like, okay, well, the first half of your season, you gotta come up with a plot and knock it out. Like, you don't have the time to play. And again, I think they've all risen to the occasion. I hope that they continue it, right? Like it was like when S.H.I.E.L.D. made that switch to doing like three plots per year instead of two, or rather instead of one. You know, where it's just like suddenly the tighter, and I think that's always been the thing with TV, right? Shorter seasons in general, in a lot of these shows lead to tighter plots just because you don't have the, well, we have these like 4 episodes that we don't really need. So let's just fuck around a little bit. Which can be fun episodes, but most shows don't use them as fun episodes, frankly. You know, they use them as just like, oh, it's a thing of the week.
Right.
So, yeah, I really do think all the shows have benefited from that. Just needing to move faster and move a little tighter and just, yeah, stop the dicking around. I mean, come on, like, I like Flash, I like Supergirl, I obviously, like, you know, we watch all these shows, but there usually isn't a season a bunch of dicking around.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Where they just kind of move a piece forward, then the next episode move it back, because they can't move stuff forward until X thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's entertaining. The dicking around is entertaining, but yeah, there is a lot of it.
Yeah, it's a nice change to see them just push forward hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, like I don't think that'll work every single year, but I do think that if they learn the lessons from it, that they'll be able to shape stuff better.
Oh yeah, I mean, and I think oddly enough, I think it especially works when like the villains are weaker. Like you can just kind of push through that real quick.
Right.
I mean, because a good villain, I mean, you can still make a longer stretch of episodes work. Like I can see them getting like a whole season out of Alice, for example, and Batwoman. But I mean, or you know, getting to where they are right now, and I would have enjoyed it. But I mean, they're hitting so hard right out of the gate with that.
Right. It also just it eliminates the need to have every villain every season be a giant end of the world thing.
Right.
Which is nice. Although I do think that the Legends thing, I don't know if we talked about this, the way the Legends season is going to be structured, it's very obviously they didn't know when they were going to air.
Oh, do tell.
Because apparently the episode of Crisis in January, which is the last part of Crisis, is considered a special episode, not the start of their season. Mm. There's a reason for this. When the season actually starts, the first 7 or so episodes will be before Crisis.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Weird.
Right, and then, so they're basically going to spend, like, a bunch of their season catching up to where they start, and then the back half dealing with it after, and it's very obviously they started working before they knew that they were going to not air until after this.
Right.
Huh. And I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, it's Legends, so I have some faith in them for it, but...
yeah.
It could be a little weird. Although, speaking of Legends, I don't know if you saw their little teaser for the season.
I saw one of the earlier teasers, where they just sort of like, you know, welcome to the Joy Lab. I can't remember what the line is.
Oh, yeah, this one was magical.
oh, wait, yes, I did. It starts with Ray Palmer as, like, Ray's cul-de-sac. Is that the one you're talking?
Yes. With like the American Beauty with Bebo's.
Yes. Oh my God, that was funny.
You know, they're back with you, like it or not. So I made the mistake of looking at replies to the like DC TV tweet with the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Oh God.
Do you want to hear some of the worst takes in the universe?
Oh boy, do I.
I'm not going to quote them because I'm not going to go look them up, but trust me, they are burned into my memory. There were a few people who were like, man, you know, I wish they'd bring this show back to when it was good, like season one.
Who the fuck thinks that?
Right? And they were angry. They're like, you know, now, like, what is this bullshit? Like, it has, like, you know, musical episodes, and it's just, it doesn't take itself seriously, and it's just, like, stupid and thinks it's funny. And I'm just like, what the shit? Like, I legitimately didn't... I mean, obviously, like, you figure there have to be these people. But I just somehow legitimately didn't honestly think that there were people who felt that way.
Right. I mean, you can...
We looked at season one and were like, this was the... Like, the show took a real bad dive in, like, the middle of season two. It's like, what?
That's just kind of crazy.
I mean, well, it's all those people, and I'm chalking them up to all those people who... You know, it's been my problem with fandom for a while, of course. You know, that when you're 12, especially if you were, like, a comic fan, like, back, like, when I was 12, you know, around, like, the mid-80s, you know, no one took comic books as a thing that was, you know, they were just
right.
Stupid.
Yeah.
And that's fine. They still are. I love them. I fucking work with them. But they're still stupid. And
that's,
I have no problem with that. But, like, you know, that thing when you're 12 where it's, like, you know, people are just, like, making fun of Batman, say, and you have that weird disconnect where someone making fun of a thing you like means they're making fun of you, right? If
exactly.
They're not taking Batman seriously, they're not taking you seriously.
Exactly.
And, you know, this is the Joker movie problem. This is, I mean, so much of this, right? Like, you're not allowed to have fun because having fun means you're not taking me personally seriously. And some people got trapped there and never broke free of it. And those are the people, I think, who missed Legends Season 1.
Yeah, also the people with, like, the worst taste possible. But yes, I know exactly what you mean.
But yeah, it's you know, someone pointed out actually this morning, shifting it over, actually, like, the reason that all the fans, you know, have problems with, like, oh, look at this plot hole, which is never a plot hole. God help us all. The word plot hole is no longer a valid sentence.
I know.
Valid phrase. But, you know, look at this problem in this movie. All about Last Jedi, but they never attack Force Awakens, even though it too has issues, God knows.
Mm-hmm.
Because Last Jedi was set up to make people question what they thought about Star Wars in a large way.
Exactly.
It forced you to actually look at it and consider it, and consider your relationship to the material. Through having the characters consider their relationship essentially to the material, right?
Right.
And this is why I think a lot of us love Last Jedi, because it's about damn time. But these people couldn't take it. They can't take a hard look at how you relate to this thing. It's all part of the same, sickness.
Yeah. It really is. I made a mistake. I'm a medium member. You know, I throw in a few bucks a month.
Yeah.
They send me blah blah blah. And one of the emails, there was a article. The headline was "Is Rey a Mary Sue?" And like a fucking idiot, I clicked on it.
Oh.
And because I thought, well, you know, they. Medium is curating my taste. They're not going to send me dumbass clickbait. Like a fucking idiot, I thought this. And what I got was this. I couldn't even finish reading it. It was this bizarre, incredibly long. And these things are always incredibly long, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sort of, you know, sort of restrained rant full of like little bold things and a formula at one point. I think this is a point around where I stopped reading it. There was a formula that was like, strong character equals well written, weak character equals poorly written. And I'm like, what frickin' moron said? And it's just it was all made no sense. It was all tautological. It was like, The Last Jedi is a bad movie because bad movies are the Last Jedi. That was it, right? And I was just like, oh, what an impoverished, just dull way of thinking. To pour this much energy into such an intellectual void, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. And what can you do? I remember somebody said on Twitter that they were at a screening of Knives Out.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came up with written and directed by Rian Johnson, she said that somebody behind her literally said, "No, I thought, and this movie was good." like it was Jeez. Ruined by the fact that Rian Johnson had made this movie. And it was like, holy shit.
And the best part is, they knew it going in, and they planned that moment for themselves.
Oh, fuck, of course.
They waited.
Yep.
Like, that was the thing. Like, this was their big thing. They were going to say that, and they were going to get, laughter. Like, they had spent 2 hours ignoring the movie just to say that.
Yep.
Yeah. So, speaking of Knives Out.
Yes, but one more analogy on that.
Yeah, please.
I take it you've read the Chronicles of Narnia?
Actually, not fully.
Oh, okay. Well, at the last,
I can tell you why, but
okay. Well, I'll tell you my thing, and then tell me why you haven't read the last volume, which is called The Last Battle, and it is the most nakedly Christian allegorical volume. It's the end times have occurred, and some are going to heaven, some are going into the Potter's ground, as it were. And there's a shack full of dwarves.
Is it by the side of the road? 15? Sorry, I just went to the Reese's. Don't ignore me. Keep going.
Right, shack by the side of the road, and it's dark in the shack, and the dwarves are they are now in heaven, but as far as they're concerned, they're in like a stinky shack, and no matter what they're told, they're like, yeah, you can't fool us, and they keep on smoking their pipe weed and laughing at people who are in paradise. And I often the allegory is obnoxious because of the Christian part, but I often think of that like, you've got something good, you've got something that actually does something different, does challenges you in
that
certain
is what
ways
you wanted.
Yeah, and the dwarves are and you're the dwarves in the shack just smoking your pipe weed and going, this sucks. Anyway,
yep.
So that's what I always go to for that.
Yeah, no, really quick with the Narnia stuff. You know, there's a lot of like the classic children's literature stuff that I never read as a kid.
Oh, okay.
Just the way I was raised. That sounds weird, but yeah, I was raised by a father who, well, I mean, I, you know, my mother too, but my father wrote science fiction.
Right.
So I kind of went from like, I literally kind of went from like Dr. Seuss to like the Asimov like kids novels type of thing, and like the Highland Juvies.
Gotcha.
So I skipped a lot of classic kid literature.
Hmm.
And when I was like 17 or 18, I was like, you know what? Like, I mean, I know Winnie the Pooh, right? Like, but I've never read Winnie the Pooh. I've seen Wizard of Oz, but I've never actually read. And that's the thing. It's like culturally, like, you know Alice in Wonderland, but I was like, I want to read Alice in Wonderland because I never have. And so I spent some time going back and reading a bunch of these, but I never got to relate to them as a kid.
Hmm.
So I have like weird views of a lot of them because, you know, like the first time I read Wizard of Oz, like I could see all the political ends of it because I was older. And when I got to the Narnia stuff, that was the problem, was I hadn't approached it as a kid. I approached it as an adult. So I was like, wow, bitch, just buy a fucking Bible. Like, what are we doing? And it just, it annoyed me so much that it was just so fucking like, hey, look, this lion might be Jesus. You know, it just, it was so obnoxiously, nakedly, like, pushing at me. You know what I mean?
I get you.
That I couldn't, and I know people who, like, you know, read it when they were kids and fell in love with it. And God knows that's fine. They're probably luckier. And go back to it later and see that for what it is, but still have the nostalgia so they can still enjoy the bits that aren't that. And I don't have that nostalgia built in. So it kind of ruined Narnia for me. I got like maybe a book in before I was just like, yeah, we're not doing that.
Fair enough. So, I mean, yeah, but I read it as a kid. And so I didn't even know when I read it what the allegories
are. That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't. Yeah. It's like Wizard of Oz. Like, if you read the first Wizard of Oz book, especially when you're a kid, it's this cool ass story.
Mm-hmm.
You read it as an adult and you're like, wow, this is just like a big political screed. it's an interesting one, but holy shit, dude. You know, there's a lot of that. Like, Alice in Wonderland is, like, I will say, actually, Alice in Wonderland was the books that I was just like, holy, we let kids read this?
Oh, that's really funny.
Like, that was just some, you know, weird political drug trip bullshit. I mean, and it's fun, and but yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
It
no,
just,
I,
it hits
I,
really
I mean...
weirdly if you just first approach it as an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
Although I think Alice is probably the one I like the most. The Alice books. Well, that and Winnie the Pooh, frankly. Winnie the Pooh is just Winnie the Pooh, regardless of when you read it, frankly.
It's weird, because I mean, I read Winnie the Pooh as a kid, and then I read some of it when I was older, just out of curiosity. And I was like, this is some brilliant shit. Like, there is some really clever story, like great storytelling and like, sort of really nice structures built into the, like, really simple
like Winnie the Pooh is kind of like the original version of, like, both the Looney Tunes stuff, as it is hitting multiple audiences, and Sesame Street, right? Like, it's...
Sure, yeah.
It works. That's mm-hmm. what I give Winnie the Pooh a pass. but, yeah, a lot of them, like Peter Pan, I was just like, fuck this kid. Like, this kid is fucking up everyone else because he's a selfish little prick. Like, just get your picture of Dorian Gray flying ass out of here.
So you're probably one of the few, like, so you sympathize with Captain Hook then, obviously.
I don't know that I do. I just feel bad for everyone involved in this. You know what I mean? Like, there's just, like, on the other hand, I do really love the movie Hook. So
there you go.
But who doesn't?
But Bob Hoskins. Sorry, I love Bob Hoskins and Hook.
There. Yes.
Who's it's me? What about Smee? Smee's me. Anyway.
Hook is delightful. but again, like, I watched Hook before I'd read, because you can't escape a lot of these things as a kid, right? Like, Alice in Wonderland, the Disney cartoons, there's references everywhere. Like, you'll run into all of them. But going back to the original sources is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I suggest it, because if you haven't, don't break them for yourself. Just live in bliss.
just let them be. But in
on the other hand, I will say,
past.
I actually did hunt down The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, like the novel.
Oh.
Because I love the movie.
Right.
And I still love the movie. The book isn't free. I mean, eh.
I don't think I've ever read the book. I think I never, it just never came across my radar. The movie, though, man, I loved that
Yeah.
movie. Yeah.
Oh, me too. That movie was like mind blowing, and it came out like right near Princess Bride too. So it was like that's like we're just gonna fuck up fairy tales forever, you know?
Yes.
Sort of little twofer. It was.
Yeah, it was Sarah Polley in it, I think, if I recall. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, that was her first role. Anyway,
Yeah.
and she hated it
Yeah,
because.
she did. Yeah, apparently she was, Terry Gilliam kept on making her do all kinds of shit that just made her sort of
Yeah,
cry
that like
and, yeah.
adults should do and not children.
Exactly.
Which is sad, but I love the movie. Anyway, speaking of movies, so I finally saw Knives Out. I know you saw it last time, and I was
Seen it
like, let's
twice
not
now.
talk about this.
Right.
I kind of want to see it again, and I know I'm not going to have time to, I don't think. But yeah, holy shit. Like, this was Rian Johnson. I mean, he has five movies under his belt, right? And again, not to go all hipster on it, but like, I remember when Brick came out, it was a limited release. It was in like two theaters, one in LA, one in New York. I was in New York at the time. I had seen like a poster for it, and a friend had heard that it was like, you know, like high school based California noir, and I was like, let's go. So like I saw that and no one had heard of them, and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, this movie is fucking amazing. And then the same thing happened with Brothers Bloom. And I was like, holy shit, this guy is an amazing writer director. And then Looper happened, and Looper's not bad.
Yeah,
But you
Looper
could
is.
tell. Yeah?
Yeah, Looper. There. I really like Looper, but there are some things about it that, if I were an omniscient god figure, I would change some things about Looper.
Yeah, there's a lot that doesn't work. Like, it's a fine, enjoyable film, but it's not. You can feel that his heart isn't in it in the same way it is for Brick and Brothers Bloom, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Last Jedi, which we like, and obviously is divisive, but Knives Out feels like a return to the Rian Johnson I fell in love with.
Very
Like,
much.
I feel like we have a trilogy. And if we're really lucky,
Yes.
we'll get more. You know? It's.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take whatever Rian Johnson does, but yeah, this is Knives Out was just I think it's probably his m just straight up most controlled, most sort of like all cylinders firing film.
I guess. I mean, in the hierarchy, I do kind of rank them like as Brick is probably the best script.
Well, it's just really nothing like Brick. I mean, it just.
Right. That's what I'm saying, though. It's just the script is just fucking hell. But Brothers Bloom is the better overall movie.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Like it's just you know the acting like the cast is. Frankly, they're older. They have more experience. They're in better control. The cinematography has stepped up because he's learned what to do. So every inch of Brothers Bloom works. I just don't think any single piece of it, like the script for it, doesn't work as well as Brick. But as a whole, it's a better film.
Yes.
And I feel like Knives Out is not as good a script as Brick, but overall, like I don't think it's quite as good an all-over movie as Brothers Bloom. But it is the most accomplished of the three.
Definitely, yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, just, you know, viewing them as pieces and wholes kind of thing. Like, Brothers Bloom is still kind of the champion here. I think it
Wow, I
just
think.
holds a little bit better.
You know, I'm gonna have to re. I'm gonna do a Rian Johnson rewatch to make my to like
That's
if I
fair.
want to come down with a ranking. It's
Yeah.
been a long time since I've seen Brothers Bloom. I enjoyed it tremendously, but it hasn't stuck in my head the way that, say, Brick has. So I will rewatch.
That's fair,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
But
I
Knives
think.
Out is just stunning.
Oh yeah, and like you, I think I saw Brick in theaters as well. It was in the local sort of repertory
Oh,
theater
nice.
here, and I remember it coming out, and I was just looking at it. I was like, I just. There was something I just heard like a tiny bit. I think all I'd heard about it was the same as you'd heard, was that it was a California noir set in a high school. And I'm like, yeah, I'll give that a
Yeah.
try. And just then the dial like that, so that 1930s like dialogue started, and I was like, oh my fucking God.
Right, combined with like the weird humor of knowing that he's doing it, like the scene at the mother's house. You know, like do you want some orange juice? Like, it's just, and it's, but he uses the jarring contrast like a weapon.
Yes.
And that's something that
That's
actually came back for me in Knives Out, where you could feel, or at least I felt like he knew he was engaging with his older audience, not older physically, but like the people who'd been with him and knew Brick and Brothers Bloom, right? Wherever you came to them.
right.
But that it's like it he knew that, and so he was playing a game with you. Where like I feel like, 'cause you know Brothers Bloom, for instance, like the entire movie is called out, like the plot is given to you in the first 10 minutes.
Right.
And
That
in
is,
this,
yeah.
yeah, sorry.
Sorry, that is a favorite Rian Johnson trick. He does it in The
Yes.
Last Jedi.
Right. But with Knives Out, he makes a reference and calls out the they can't tell a prop from a real thing
Yeah.
in a way that makes it specifically feel like the death is fake.
Exactly.
And he leads you straight down the okay, this death is fake, and then he starts peeling back the layers and makes sure to show you the actual moment to go, yeah, no, you're wrong about that, keep going. But that's it, he keeps giving you reveals and leading you very carefully down a specific path just to go, yeah, no, you're still wrong, keep going. Like you've almost got it. But it's such a careful amount of control to know exactly how your audience is gonna jump, to always know where to twist it. Do you see what I'm am I making sense here?
I know you are making perfect sense.
And it's just it's just a masterful bit of work that way. But I was just I loved it so much for the okay, we're gonna play a game now. Like we're actively playing sort of a game of Clue
Right.
with him, and it's an interesting experience, and I am curious to see how that changes the second time. And something you mentioned last time we talked, actually, that like you want to see it to see how it plays when you know.
Right.
So you've seen it a second time. So
I have.
how does it change in how it plays?
It's funny because it's not all that. The experience is not all that different, but it's enjoyable to see what you've described is knowing that it's happening. As far as I'm concerned, it made it like more enjoyable because now you can see like with the curtains back, you can see exactly what he's doing as he's doing it, and you know where to look. Like
Right.
he crowds his frames so much in Knives Out. Like you've got entire rooms full of things that he's saying, where are you going to look? What's the important thing? And second time around, you don't have that confusion. Like you know where you're supposed to look, so you can begin to see what he's like, the structure of what he's doing. And because you've essentially described it. But one of the things I really appreciated in this in the second viewing was the way he basically gives you this sort of like superposition of things. The question is, was it a murder? Well, yes. Was it a suicide? Yes. Was it an accident? Yes. It's like all
Right.
these possibilities all at once, all held in the air, all of them confirmed as it goes along. Like the first two confirmed, and then of course the murder part you know is coming. So you're just waiting to see how it all manages to sort of unspool over the course of the film.
Right. Like there's one thing I want to look for if when I see it again.
What's that?
Weirdly enough, because so much of the movie shows you and is very careful about showing you where I am blanking on the character's name, where Daniel Craig's character is looking. You know, because like controlling where he looks is the only way you get some of those great laughs of, oh, he didn't
Right.
notice this. That I want
Yes.
to see when he looks at her feet.
I tried to look for that and I didn't notice it. But I mean like it may be me.
I just feel like it's such an important gimme that he's playing such a game, and again, he knows that people are going to watch it twice, right?
Yeah.
That he wouldn't, given the control everywhere else, he had to have filmed it.
Yeah, no, I know he did. I just didn't catch the moment. And I'm pretty sure it's when they're sitting outside on the patio.
Yeah.
And he's first questioning her that he sees. He's just but I and I think it's played off so sort of like carefully and casually. Like it's not like his eyes don't fix on the shoes. It's just that he's like sort of sitting there with his eyes downcast, and that's the moment.
Yeah, no, it would have to be like just so carefully, because you don't want anyone to notice it. Like, you have to cover that one.
Precisely.
But I'm just curious.
The thing that it's funny because there's a bit of a luxury with this second viewing that I was able to sort of see more things. Like, I got to pay attention to the baseball.
Well, yeah, that I was tracking just the minute it gets thrown. I'm like, okay, that's a thing.
Right. But I lost track of the baseball somewhere, and then I was like, and then I didn't realize just how it, because of course he picks it up. He throws out, and if he hadn't thrown the baseball, if Don Johnson's character had not thrown the baseball out of the window after finding the blank letter, then Jamie Lee Curtis's character would never have found the letter. Because it's when she gets the baseball from the dog and puts it back, then she sees the blank letter and knows that it's invisible ink.
Exactly.
And then she looks at it and discovers the... But I love that there's an entire little subplot playing out beneath all the main action, which is the story of like another, like a whole, like their marriage and how that sort of ends up disintegrating at the end. Mm-hmm. And it's just, the whole thing.
The whole thing, like I just remember, you know, cause I saw it like that Sunday. So it had been out for a bit, but Thanksgiving weekend, so a lot of people obviously were still seeing it for the first time, and it, you know, hadn't like been spoiled much anywhere. Like I'd managed to avoid everything. But the first time he hits that piano key, like in the beginning, it got laughter. And I was tracking it because it was one of those things of just like, hey. And he hits it the first time and there's laughter. And he hits it the second time and there's a little bit less laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of these, okay, what's going on with this?
Yeah.
And right at the point, everyone's just like, okay, what the fuck, is right when the characters break and they're like, what the fuck? It's just the level of control, like audience control. There are very few writers or directors who can really control an audience that way.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, like George Miller can do it.
Yeah.
You know, Spielberg at his height could do it.
Right. Yeah,
like,
no.
Go back and watch Close Encounters.
Yeah.
And Spielberg is just controlling the audience.
Oh my God, yes.
You know, the good Indiana Jones movies, like when they tick over, it's just that, and it comes from, I think, a comedic timing bit. Because you have to know when the audience is going to laugh. You have to know when they're going to blink, when they're going to look left. And there are all sorts of tricks, but it's still just nailing it is hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Knives Out is... Oh, God. I look forward to many, many years of rewatching that movie.
Uh-huh. Oh, me too. I just love the entire thing. And I love the moment when Chris Evans goes, oh, in for a penny, and he grabs the knife. And it's funny because I was watching it, and as soon as he grabs it, I'm like, I was like, oh, okay, there's the prop knife.
Right.
But the rest of the audience, I don't think it figured it out that quickly. So like that's happening, I start laughing, and then silence, and I'm sort of chortling, and then other people in the audience were like, oh, you could feel it when they were figuring it out, and it was really fun.
It was kind of interesting because everyone in my audience, the minute he grabbed the knife, everyone started laughing. Like, I had, like, kind of, I think I accidentally ended up in, like, the perfect audience for this film. Down to, actually, when the movie was first starting, there were these guys sitting next to me that were kind of loud enough that the people on the other side of me who I was with could hear them, too. And they were like, oh, like, she did it, you know, like, type of thing.
Right.
And it was like, oh, God, am I going to have to spend this whole movie, like, I will, like, hurt them if they fuck this up, right?
Yeah.
Like, and... Like, they did it, like, the first, like, when they go to the grandmother. They're like, oh, she did it. Like, instantly. And then they start doing that thing. And that lasted maybe 5 minutes, and then they were just dead. I don't think they were expecting this.
Right.
And so, like, the minute it grabbed them by the throat, they just shut the fuck up for 2 hours.
Yes. And what's the other thing? The other thing I really found fascinating about Knives Out is that generally, like, one of the like because we're sort of conditioned to expect maybe from Rian Johnson or at least from the genre like a little bit of a noir twist, you're kind of waiting for the moment at which the main character turns out to have different intentions than what they seem to have all along. So for a substantial part of the film, I was waiting for Ana de Armas to turn out to actually sort of have like, to be sort of like aha, to if not be the villain, to at least, be able to sort of turn. But she never does.
No,
Like
but everyone else does. Like even the
Exactly.
detective does, frankly, at the end,
Yes.
he's like, yeah, but no, fuck it. Like his whole like, wait. At the end, I was just like, oh shit, like there's the twist. He just shifted it like 30 degrees.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, just fascinating goddamn film.
Yeah. And some of the contrivances in it were just so hilarious. And so, like, we've got a character who can't lie because they throw up. I mean, that is frankly ridiculous, but it's great.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like
But it's ridiculous in the way that the genre allows for it, you know what I mean?
exactly.
I think that's why it didn't stick out at me so much. It's just like, oh, here's the weird contrivance character, but it's also the main character for once. And okay.
Yes.
I did like the note of them watching Murder, She Wrote.
In Spanish, I found that fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just that little bit. Just, hey. Yeah, no, it was just, down to like little things of, oh, the go board fell. And when you see the board, you're like, that? How are they going to explain that away? And then he comes over, he's like, nothing, and flips on the table. He's like, huh. And you're like, yeah, that doesn't really hold, does it?
Yeah. Yes,
Like,
exactly.
he gets to every single note that the audience would have, but he answers them honestly. Just, again, he's playing off a different playbook than we have. So they're all answered honestly, just we're doing different math, essentially.
Yes. Which a delightful. Yeah, no,
And
Knives
holy shit,
Out.
that entire cast.
Holy
Like,
shit.
I never thought I would see the day where I'm, like, telling people, like, holy shit, you have to go see this movie. Don Johnson is incredible. That's not a thing I thought I would ever say in my life. Nothing against Don Johnson, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, everybody in that film was just fantastic. Just straight up great.
I mean, and let's be fair, going into it, like, we knew Jamie Lee Curtis would do exactly what she, like, she's incredible. We knew Chris Evans could play exactly the character he's playing.
Right.
And while I wasn't expecting the accent, like, having first seen Daniel Craig in Layer Cake, I was like, no, this is his movie.
Yep.
Like, he could do this one.
I suspect foul play.
Yeah, it's just, but it was kind of like everyone else. I was like, okay, how are you going to deal with Rian Johnson, like, just moving at full speed?
Yep. I said, I observe the arc of truth and where it will fall, and then I stroll leisurely to the place where the truth will be, and then it falls at my feet. I'm like, holy shit, this is great writing. Just chef's
It's like
kiss.
Gravity's Rainbow. I haven't read
No, nobody
Like, you're not wrong.
has. I've actually read Gravity's Rainbow and I've read it twice, but
Sure, I mean I've read Infinite Jest more than once, but come
there you
on.
go. Yes, it was a fair call. I thought,
You
yeah.
do have to wonder if like Pynchon happens to have, because it feels like a movie he would watch.
Oh shit, yes.
And
Yeah.
I'm kind of like I would love just to have been in the theater if he was watching this, like when he was there, just for that moment, if him just being like, yeah, fair, fuck you. Like just I get it. Anyway.
So let's talk briefly about Harley Quinn. I'm curious as to what you thought
Yes.
of the first two episodes.
I both really like the show and I really don't.
Tell me why you don't.
This would be a perfect, like, great, funny, well-written, well-done show. What it doesn't need is the excessive violence or the cursing.
I find the same thing. Like the cursing is like fine, but it's kind of like
It's fine, but it's unnecessary. And
yeah.
that's, I mean, it's fine that they have it sort of thing, but they really don't need it.
Yeah.
And the violence is just boring.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying too hard. I feel like they'd have a great show that more people could watch. Like, kids could even watch.
Oh, totally, yeah.
without it. Like all the Bane shit in the second episode is fucking priceless.
Yeah. I absolutely love that they're making fun of the Tom Hardy Bane voice. This is,
yeah,
that is like amazingly funny.
Right, but just, I mean, the entire setup of like, oh, it's the bar mitzvah for Penguin's nephew, and just, you know, I ordered the beef, you ordered the chicken, you had time to think about this. Like, just Bane's, like, constant whining.
Mm-hmm. and frankly, I just love the dunking on Kite Man.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, like, the first episode, I think the funniest thing in the first episode, frankly, is a throwaway bit. That without the rest of the unnecessary crap, it would have stood out more.
What was that?
But it really was the, like, how you doing? Pretty good. I was going to go pick up some Indian. What do you want? Like, just text me. Oh, I want this. Just text me. You're right here. Like, that entire, like, everyone has had that discussion.
I know. Yes.
And it's just, like, the relationship between Ivy and Harley is so well done.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like, again, it's getting lost in the, and now we're going to have hyperviolence because we feel like it.
Yeah, I think that was the thing I found. It was like, it's fine if you want to have, like, violence and cursing and so on. I just wasn't sure that it really added anything to the show.
Like I said, I feel like it actually distracts from the show.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, because there's good stuff for everyone in there, so why sort of, like, create this, like, strange exclusion, like, because the funny stuff is stuff that ever, like, you know, it's fine for kids. I mean, it's, you know, it's something that children could enjoy as well as adults. But, yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
So, yeah, it's like, I like it, and I really want to keep watching it, but I'm also just like, what? Yeah, why are you putting a funnel on this? Like, why are you tying it down?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame. Yeah. Yep. Also, of course, the third season of Ms. Maisel dropped, and this Friday the fourth season of Expanse dropped, so God help us all.
Oh, yes. God help me. So I have not, I instead of watching Mrs. Maisel, for some reason, I started watching V-Wars on Netflix, and what a load of nonsense. Man.
I don't even know if, okay, like, here's the thing. I don't know what V-Wars is. I'm going to be honest with you. I have no clue what this show is. When I've heard the name, people are like, oh, I've seen V-Wars. I thought it was a sequel to V at first.
That would be better, actually.
And then, like, I looked it up, and it's a John Mayberry and Alan Robinson comic.
Oh, I didn't know that was based
about vampires, apparently.
Yes.
But I really did. I honestly thought it was like, oh, they're just bringing back V. But apparently not.
Apparently not. No, Ian Somerhalder plays the main character, and a whole host of Canadian genre actors, just tons of them, like, instantly recognizable. And they just, like, it's clear that they poured, like, money into the first episode, so it actually looks like a decent television show. And then after that, it's just a bunch of people driving around, like, rural highways on BC. That seems to be it. And hang out in warehouses and cabins, and, yeah. It's that very specific genre of, like, cheap Canadian film genre television. After four episodes, I was like, I cannot. I am done.
Yeah,
When you see a vampire, like, jump into a car and hotwire it, you're like, this is... I don't know. That was,
well,
I think that moment I was like, I wasn't sure whether I loved it or I was like done with it, but yeah. Then it was.
Well,
done.
The third season of Ms. Maisel happened.
Yes, tell me.
And I was like, at the time, you know, last week we were like, oh, we'll see how much we watch. And with my experience with the Netflix shows, when this happens, like, you always end up watching the whole thing, and I'm like three episodes in, and we have trouble talking about it.
Hmm.
So I watched the whole thing.
And
see what you did. You see what you did? And you didn't watch any of it. I'm just saying. No, I really like the series. I like the season. But early on, there are a couple things, like the first, like, three, maybe four episodes. There's like two or three notes that felt out of character for various characters. That existed just to have a thing happen.
Ah, okay.
And it was weird, because usually the show is better than that.
Hmm.
It didn't, like, kill the show at all. It was just, it was weird.
It was, and maybe a little surprising.
Yeah, it just felt off.
Huh, okay.
But for all that, like, when it ticks over, when it's working, for the, you know, both for, like, the high moments and the characters at their lows, we're getting deeper into a lot of the characters in good ways.
Well, that sounds...
And they're still allowed to... Sorry, I'm actually still drinking coffee this morning. and we're still allowed to have them be terrible people and to fuck up.
See, I like that.
And that's fascinating. Because, I mean, again, like, it's that thing that she's been trying to figure out since Gilmore Girls, where, like, the assholes never... They got rewarded for it.
Gotcha, yeah.
I will say that overall, three seasons in, as much as I do like the show, I still think Bunheads is the best thing she's ever done.
You know, Bunheads just had a... It had a spark.
Gone,
it had a spark, and it was gone too soon. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
But God rest Bunheads. But again, I think this was a very good season. I think the first season still had an energy that this season hasn't... you remember the second season, like, didn't quite match the energy of the first season?
Yeah. No, I found...
It was still really good, but...
Yeah. For that reason, well, they kept on dragging out some characters and plots when I thought they were long past their due date.
Yeah, this has some of that too. I still really do like the season, and there were bits where I was like, okay, we're dragging out this stuff, but we're ignoring this other stuff here. And by the end of the season, they kind of get there. So
oh, good, okay.
And of course, like, I think. The first season ended on a high note. The second season ended on a kind of like high and sad note.
Mm-hmm.
This season does something different.
Okay. Well, by the next time we talk, well, I'll probably have seen the whole thing. So yeah.
Yeah, and so, I probably won't have any time to really watch Expanse. But I'm gonna want to.
I'm gonna make so the might. Time. I'm gonna make. Like, the
well,
time.
That's the thing, right?
Yes.
I'm busy a lot of that Saturday.
Right.
So I gotta see if I can. You know, make the time like Friday into some Saturday to just watch all of it. And this is my problem with the binge watch thing, as we've talked about before, I'm sure. You know, that like when you have a show like that, if I get distracted, I tend to forget it for too long.
Yeah.
And move on. So like I try to just, like I put other shows aside. Like I haven't watched Stumptown this week.
Oh, neither have I. I'm behind.
Because I was like, well, let me get through Ms. Maisel. And partially, let me finish up my rewatch of Lost Girl, because if I get off of that, I know I'm not going to go back.
Right.
Because the fifth season, not the best season of the show.
Yeah.
In any stretch. It was in the back half of the fifth season where they were just, like, running to finish things up. So I was like, if I don't watch these, like, next, like, five episodes, I never will. And I just... I'm doing a whole rewatch. I kind of, you know, they deserve this much type of thing. But yeah, so it's, like, Expanse. I'm like, I just want to watch all of it right now. But I also like the weekly drops. I really do.
Yeah. One thing I read some early reviews of The Expanse, and one thing that several people have noted that it may be a show that works better in weekly increments than all at once.
I could see that. Like, yeah. I mean, I know when it was weekly, I was always like, but I want another one right now, which is what you want.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't know if getting it will. Make me feel too full. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
So part of me is like, I do kind of want to drag it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Hey.
I might just gulp it down and feel bad about it.
Fair enough. Well, we'll get there when we get there.
Yep.
Anyway, I have to put a hard stop on this because I have a thing I need to get to.
No problem. I have a ton of work to do today, so.
So let's bring on the music.
All right. Woo!
Music.